97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Over and over from the president, from his team, you know, Stephen Miller saying it's like Baghdad and Ethiopia. They seem to hold their harshest criticism sometimes for cities that are majority black and brown.
Yeah, there you go. Good morning to you. Welcome into the Mark Cox Morning Show. That's some joker on MSDNC named Eugene Daniels. About 2 hours from now, just as this show ends at 9 a.m., President Trump is going to hold a major news conference, and he's going to announce, among other things, a crackdown on crime and homelessness in Washington, D.C. And all the left can argue is he only focuses his attention on communities that are majority black and brown. It must be a race issue that he's cracking down on the homeless and crime in D.C. I'm sorry. If you are a crime victim, do you really care about the race of the individual who committed the crime against you? No, you just want to feel safe. Welcome back into the show. So that's coming up here for you in about 2 hours. I'm sure we will be carrying it here on 97.1 FM Talk. It'll be part of the Brian Kilmeade Show, which, of course, starts at 9. But as soon as the president gets underway, I'm sure Brian will go to that live for you so you can hear what he's talking about. So the big question, Kim, is when's the last time you were in D.C.? Has it been a while?
Oh, yeah, since I was a kid.
Okay. So I went there a couple years ago for a radio conference that they used to do there with the Federation for American Immigration Reform. And one of my impressions of D.C. is that it's turned into a crap hole over the years. Because as beautiful as parts of it are, they allow the homeless to camp pretty much wherever the hell they want. All the big circles that they have there with the homes that are worth millions of dollars, I'm sure the roundabouts have homeless encampments all the way around them. Like some of the big monuments and stuff they have to founding fathers and all of that stuff, homeless encampments all around them. There's a permanent encampment across the street from the White House. All of this stuff has gotten only worse in the past 5 or 6 years since the president left office the first time. The 4 years of Biden, it got worse, but it's been bad for a long time. The crime problem is you've had congressional members of Congress carjacked.
Mm-hmm.
You've had people shot and killed.
Yep.
Who were congressional aides right in the streets of Washington, D.C. And they've done nothing,
mm-hmm.
not nearly enough about it.
Well,
does that sound familiar?
Yes. And it's clearly a problem elsewhere, including here in this area. And I mean, you think about some of the places that you'd mentioned and where these encampments are. Those are very popular tourist attractions, too. And I'm sure that was intentional that they set up there, knowing that maybe they could get some people to give them some money. But that would deter families who have kids from wanting to take them and having to pass by all these people to go visit, you know. One of these landmarks.
The only color here that is a common denominator of the president's crackdown is blue. Because all of these problems happen in big blue areas. It's like a vacuum, right? It attracts the homeless because they know they'll go to big blue progressive areas where they'll be accommodated and given free stuff. So they're attracted to those areas. And then the people that have to live there end up moving out because they don't want to put up with it. They don't want to put up the policies. And in D.C., they're about to get all that cleaned up for them. I was surprised to hear the president say Muriel Bowser, the mayor there, had done a good job, but she just can't get it. She's tried to do a good job. He said she's a good person, but she just hasn't gotten the job done.
That's what Griff said. He felt like Muriel might be coming around.
Well, she repainted the street. Remember during the Biden term, she painted the Black Lives Matter sign on the street in front of Trump's hotel. And they erased all that when mm-hmm. Trump got reelected. They repainted the road.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, she was forced to, just like other cities were forced to paint over that stuff.
They need to. Coming up, we're going to get to Tanya J. Powers as well from Fox News Radio. She's talking about the big summit that could happen at the end of the week between the president and Vladimir Putin. So we'll get her take on that and whether or not that includes the Ukrainian president, kind of what's at stake there. And we've talked about redistricting a bit this morning. They're talking about it in Missouri. a 7-1 map that would basically eliminate Emmanuel Cleaver's district over in Kansas City. Well, it wouldn't eliminate it. It would broaden it so that it wasn't gerrymandered to guarantee a Democrat congressional seat. Because that's what's happening right now. If the lines over there were ever drawn the way they should have been, we would have 7 Republican members of Congress and 1 Democrat in the city of St. Louis. The one in the city of St. Louis is like court mandated. The one in Kansas City is not. So we'll see what happens there. The FBI is now trying to locate those Texas lawmakers who fled the state so they didn't have to vote on this. Even though they're going to vote against it, they don't have the power to stop it in Texas. So we're going to get to Dan Snell. He's talking about that and what's at stake for the midterms with all of that. So we got all that coming up. We got some Sticks tickets we're going to give away next hour with Kevin Cronin. So stay tuned for that. But right now, Drew, let's get to our top stories, please.
The Mark Cox Shortlist.
We're looking forward to hearing from the Clintons. The American people want to know what went on Epstein Island. We know Clinton went there many times. We just want to ask Bill Clinton what he saw.
Yeah, something tells me Bill's not going to like that very much. I'm guessing he'll fight that subpoena. But we'll find out shortly. Stay tuned.
I'm focused on running for re-election as governor of the state of Illinois. And everything that I do really is focused on lifting up the people of my state.
JB Jokester over in the state of Illinois. Of course, they had to ask him, are you running for president? Well, I won't rule anything out. Of course he's running for president. Because his ego is big along with everything else.
Of course, you've got to have the law follow the facts here. You don't just indict people to indict people. You indict people because they broke the law. But if you look at what Tulsi and Kash Patel have revealed in the last couple of weeks, I don't know how anybody can look at that and say that there wasn't aggressive violations of the law.
Yeah, J.D. Vance says that indictments are coming for some of these former officials who deceived the American public on purpose to try to, sidetrack Donald Trump and his agenda in his first term.
Ago today, Michael Brown Jr. was killed in Ferguson by police. It was a case that gained national attention, highlighting, among other things, police brutality in America.
But did it really? That was Channel 5 reporting on the 11-year anniversary this weekend of Mike Brown's death. That was marked on Saturday. And, I'd love to have a question and answer session with the writers at News Channel 5. How could you write a sentence that said the Mike Brown case focused people on police violence around the nation? I'd love to know that, because it just so happens, Kim St. Ange, that in front of me this morning, I have the final report from the Barack Obama Department of Justice. And it's really weird when you read it, because when you get to the final thing there, they said that this case should be closed without prosecution. They found no evidence despite, dozens of investigators and everybody they could throw at it. They found no evidence that Darren Wilson or the police department did anything wrong. And they cleared Darren Wilson of everything. And yet News Channel 5's reporting this weekend is like all of the other local media stations. They want to heap all this praise on Mike Brown and ignore the facts of the case. They want to make him into something now that he never was and never would have been, but now he's bigger than life because he tried to take a gun from a police officer and got shot to death. It was a tragedy. It didn't need to happen, but it happened because of Mike Brown's actions that day, not what Darren Wilson did, and his life was ruined over it. And the big lie continues 11 years later. What a shame. What a black eye on the Justice Department in this country. Now, eventually they cleared everything up, but the way they attacked that situation, assuming guilt on the part of Darren Wilson, was ridiculous. And then, you know, of course, Wesley Bell reopened the case and had to reach the same conclusion after he got into office as the prosecutor. So here we are, 11 years later, and the lies continue about why Mike Brown died that day in Ferguson. All right, coming up, we'll get to Tanya J. Powers, talk more about a Trump-Putin summit that is scheduled in Alaska. And that's going to happen on Friday. We'll get to all that and more for you coming up.
What will stop a third war is to do things differently than we did in 2022. Is to keep arming Ukraine so that Russia will be deterred by the most lethal army on the continent of Europe right now, which is Ukraine. Security guarantees that if you come into Ukraine again, you'll be fighting more than just Ukraine.
Yeah, Senator Graham this weekend talking about what he would expect out of any deal on the Ukraine-Russian war. And there's supposed to be a summit, I guess you would call it, this weekend. And we've got Tanya J. Powers reporting on that this morning for Fox News Radio. Tanya, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Are these commonly referred to as summits when they get together, or is this just some preliminary meeting that they're having on this?
You know, I've seen it called both. Okay. I've seen it called a summit. I think whenever two world leaders get together, and it's like, yeah, it seems like summit is the word that gets tossed around a lot. I'm not right. sure what would set it apart to be anything else, but there you go. I'm not really not sure.
And it's going to happen in Alaska, correct?
Yes. No truth to the rumor that it's at Sarah Palin's house. there's been a lot of people who've been asking me about this. They do plan to meet in Alaska without the Ukrainians there. Now, this is barring any kind of last-minute situation where they would get them involved. It is an eternity between now and Friday, so who knows what could happen.
Right.
But there have been, you know, a couple of things. President Trump has suggested maybe land swaps could be part of a peace deal between Russia and Ukraine. Kyiv has basically batted that down and said they are not giving Ukrainian land to the invaders without any security guarantees or arms for Ukraine. This, you know, seems to be a big sticking point for Zelensky. He seems to not be of the opinion that, yeah, okay, well, you invaded it, you get to keep it. That's not where he's coming from. There have also been some coordinated statements from European leaders, seven of them, along with Zelensky, that says basically that Ukraine can't be sidelined in any talks over ending Russia's invasion of it. So that is another, you know, kind of piece in all of this where, the European leaders are saying, hey, Ukraine really needs to be involved. And Vice President Vance actually kind of hinted on some of that with Sunday Morning Futures. He was on there yesterday on Fox, and he said he didn't think it was a good idea for Putin and Zelensky to meet before Trump meets with Putin on Friday, but did suggest that the three of them meet and that the U.S. wants to schedule something to that effect. The White House is working on scheduling a meeting between the three of them. Zelensky has posted on social media over the weekend that Russia, this is a quote, Russia is doing everything to prolong hostilities, refuses to stop the killings despite announced deadlines, and is trying to bargain for better positions on the ground for future strikes. Ukraine is ready to work as productively as possible with all partners for the sake of real peace. Matters concerning Ukraine must be decided with Ukraine's participation. So he's pretty firm on where he stands with that.
Yeah, I'm just wondering what the odds are of Zelensky joining in on this meeting, or perhaps Zelensky and Trump meeting even before Friday. Like you said, it doesn't sound like it's that far away, but that's actually an eternity, especially with how fast the Trump administration moves.
Right. I mean, there's so many things that could happen between now and then. I mean, heck, between now and 24 hours from now, who knows? That is one of the things that we're watching. As far as the soundbite you played from Lindsey Graham there, I just did a piece in the last few days about, NATO and, the allies and European countries, getting ready to buy arms from the U.S., specifically the Patriot air defense systems, the missiles, the ammunition and all that. We make those, and other countries have to buy those from us to give them to Ukraine. And that's kind of what's taking place at this point with these other countries supplying, weapons to Ukraine to help it defend itself.
Yeah, that's true. And then in the backdrop of all of this, that we've got this dispute over, what's going on in Gaza and Israel. And I don't know what role that all plays in it, but that's another conflict where people are trying to pressure the U.S. I've heard Ambassador Huckabee talking about this, into pressuring Israel on aid to Gaza. And I mean, this is a complicated set of meetings going on this week.
It is. I mean, and like you said, the situation in Gaza is a whole different. I mean, the Al Jazeera team that was just killed over there. As a matter of fact, I'm working a story right now about that, about the Al Jazeera team that was targeted outside a hospital, the Shifa hospital there, where they were sheltering. And Israel has basically said, yeah, they've taken credit for it. I mean, they've not credit, responsibility is a better word for that. But that is odd for them to have come out and said and claimed responsibility for taking out that team, because they have accused one of the reporters with that team of being a Hamas cell leader.
Oh, wow.
This guy has denied that. They started saying this about maybe a year ago, that one of their reporters was a Hamas cell leader. He has denied it. Al Jazeera has denied it. You know, they have dismissed this as, you know, just incorrect information. But they not only got him, they got, I think, four or five more journalists. Like, the entire Al Jazeera team was pretty much wiped out. And, you know, regarding that, I mean, international media has basically not been allowed to be over there. Al Jazeera was one of the ones that was kind of fielding a larger team of reporters that were still there reporting from on the ground, and now they're gone. So that's also just kind of, you know, happened in the last day or so. So
right.
Things are happening fast there as well.
Yeah, I heard about that report just this morning myself. Tanya, we appreciate your time reporting on this. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you.
You bet. Yeah. In fact, I hadn't connected those two things. I heard that Hamas was claiming that a rocket fired by Israel had hit a tent containing journalists. And when I heard that report, I thought, well, that must have been a mistake. What she's saying was it was targeted toward a guy that they claim that was a Hamas journalist who was also a front man working, that a Al Jazeera journalist was working with Hamas or one of these terrorist groups. Wow. That story's bound to blow up here this morning. For sure. Coming up, we'll talk more about that redistricting battle of those Democrats that have fled the great state of Texas for like New York or something. It's the craziest thing ever. We'll get to Dan Snell after the break. All right. I don't know if we're going to pull this off in Missouri or not, but I hope so. If you've been following along, the conservatives in the Freedom Caucus here in Missouri tried a couple of years ago. I remember talking to a number of people about this at the time, trying to get Missouri to switch to a 7-1 congressional map, because it just makes sense. We've gerrymandered a couple of districts in Missouri to guarantee they'll go to Democrats, but only one of those is required by the court, and that's the one in St. Louis, the first congressional district. The one in Kansas City is not, and it's time to mix this up to reflect the fact that this is a deeply red state. Same thing they're doing down in Texas, and now some of their legislators have up and flown the coop to New York to hide. We've got Dan Snell with us this morning, of course, a political analyst and a leadership expert. And Dan, how are you?
I'm doing dandy, Mark. Always great to be with you and Kim and your St. Louis listeners.
Well, thank you very much. I mean, it doesn't show much leadership to me if you flee the state instead of standing and fighting your ground in Texas.
Yeah. Texas is not a very good look for the state of Texas overall, for the Democrats for sure, for just running instead of staying and articulating and trying to do what they're elected to do, and that's convince with words and actions and facts and figures. That may not be what best serves the constituencies that they serve. And the biggest challenge, you know, in all of this is I hate to see the whole country we've got so many good things happening that President Trump is doing in his efforts. But then we get this just creates division across the whole country. Like, as you said, we're talking about it in Missouri and Ohio and Indiana. And I hate to see I live in Kansas right on the Missouri border. And I hate to see the division that takes place anytime when an issue just causes people to stand up and say, you know, this is not right.
The Democratic lawmakers who in particular fled the state to Illinois have said, well, we're just going to stay here until the special session's over, and then it basically would, you know, not allow them to vote on this. Now, by the way, I do understand that this vote also is involving funding for the flooding victims, so that it's not just about redistricting. So they're holding up that as well. But nothing would stop Governor Abbott from just continuously calling special sessions, right? Because he said
right,
that's what
yeah.
he would do.
Yeah. Yeah. And he has said that I'm just going to continue to call special sessions, so they'd either have to stay out of the state or return. And I think Governor Abbott's done such a great job. He's always been a shining example of a good governor that's active, and he's an overcomer in the, you know, his physical challenges. I hate to see that he as a person now becomes someone that has, you know, is this right? You know, there's a book, as your conservative listeners probably follow, I read a book that says all things are permissible and lawful, but they're not all helpful and building up. And in Corinthians, you know, the Bible talks about that. And this is permissible what they're doing. Although, I mean, this is just me. And I wrote the Winston Candidate. You know, I talk about, hey, we're here to serve and be consistent and make use wisdom. I don't know if this is good, because it the consistency of this is that, hey, we do a census every 10 years. Yes, it's legal and lawful to be able to do it at any time in midterm. But in Texas case, just in 2022, Governor Abbott signed his 10-year redistricting. So I understand the what and the why, but in this case, I don't know. It's just not a good look.
Well, you know, we had a guest on earlier who's a legal expert with the Heritage Foundation, Hans von Spakovsky, who pointed out that what happened in 21 in Texas was forced by the court. Like they drew the districts one way, and of course it was challenged by the left, and the court came in and told them, threw that out, and told them they had to take this different one. So this would be their chance to fix that. And I guess my problem with it, Dan, is that the Democrats have done this exact same thing in Illinois, in California, in New York. You know, I think Kristen Welker pointed out to Pritzker this weekend, look, 44% of your residents voted for Donald Trump, but you have a 14-3 count on congressional seats. Only 3 Republican seats in the entire state of Illinois, even though 44% of your voters voted for Donald Trump. So it's very biased in one direction. I personally don't have any problem with Texas doing to the Democrats exactly what the Democrats have done to Republicans in a bunch of other states.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying and agree that we should review. But is it something we should just do in a knee jerk, or should we really look at this as a better way to how do we redistrict that makes it consistently fair for the long term? Because I hate to see America get into a what you might call swap shop politics, where who's ever in the White House then has the ability to ask governors to do changes. I try to look for, you know, serving all the people consistently over time, and this is just dividing us. And I just do not like the country divided. It's okay to agree to disagree, but not when you're threatening. You know, St. Louis, I say with a smile, St. Louis and Kansas City, we have differences, right? And over the years, it's always, oh, Kansas City doesn't always like St. Louis and vice versa. And what happens is we have a situation that's not good for the whole state of Missouri.
Well, that's probably sports more than anything, right? But now we have to root for the Chiefs because we don't have an NFL team. And
and we have to help make sure that they can a huge renovation for their stadium.
Exactly.
Chiefs and the Royals.
We're paying for that now, too, all the taxpayers.
Exactly.
Are. All right, Dan, we appreciate your time. Thank you.
You're always great to be with you. Stay winsome.
Yep, we will do that, Dan. Thank you. Dan and I will agree to disagree on this one. We didn't start this. Republicans did not start this fight. And if the congressional maps are not drawn like I said earlier, the crooked dog's back leg to make something fit a certain way, if you've just expanded them, that's not gerrymandering. Gerrymandering is drawing a district from somewhere in Boone County in Columbia all the way to the edge of St. Charles County just to make it fit a certain demographic. I mean, there are examples of gerrymandering, for sure. But somebody said that gerrymandering was named after a governor in the 1800s whose name was Jerry, who redrew districts for the first time like this in like 1812. And it was shaped like a salamander. So mm-hmm. they called it gerrymandering, which is where the term came from. But you can't look at the state of Illinois. My friends over there, God bless you. You're underrepresented by a lot.
Well, even Stephen Colbert poked fun at J.B. Pritzker. He held up a picture of the congressional map, and he said, look, and he pointed out how the twists and the turns that these districts have, it's pathetic. And it's like, how can you defend that and try to claim that wasn't gerrymandered to be able to give the Democrats more of a voice?
A majority. They absolutely did that. And their argument does not hold water in what's going on in Texas, in my opinion. All right, coming up, we're going to get to Kim on a whim. What are we talking about?
Remember months ago, Donald Trump signed that executive order that said that truck drivers had to speak English?
I do.
Did you really believe anything would come from that? Because it has. And
Good. People
are getting ticketed. I'll tell you where and how this whole thing's going down when we come back.
Kim on a whim.
The first two truck drivers have been ticketed for not speaking English. These are the first two truck drivers who have been ticketed since Donald Trump signed that executive order back in late April. It just went into effect in June. So it's only been a couple of months. Now, these two particular truck drivers, they were traveling through Alabama. They were pulled over in DeKalb County, and again, they were ticketed. And keep in mind, I mean, this has been a policy that's been in place since, I believe, the 1930s. And it was under President Obama when he kind of loosened it and lowered the penalties. And so clearly there were some issues that were caused by that, whether it would be these truck drivers having to communicate with law enforcement,
sure,
or communicate with other motorists or companies they're partnering with to transport, products. And they're not able to do that. And what would be really scary is if they couldn't speak any English. And then, my goodness, if they couldn't even read one of the traffic signs. You know, if there was a sign that they weren't familiar with, and then they do something that could end up causing a really serious crash.
How do you do your job? I don't get that. I mean, I couldn't imagine going to a foreign country and driving a truck, not speaking the language, not understanding mm-hmm. what the road signs were. I mean, if you had GPS, that still wouldn't help you 100% of the time.
Well, now a lot of them are using Google Translate. I mean, remember there was a story where some girl graduated high school and she ended up suing her high school because after 4 years, she said she's from a different country. She couldn't even read and write, that she was using Google Translate or some other app that was comparable to write her papers and do tests. I mean, everything. It's so advanced now, the technology to translate, that people have found ways around it. But when you have to make a split-second decision when you're driving an 18-wheeler on a busy interstate, you don't have time to whip out your phone and be like, hey, Google Translate, I see an upcoming road. You don't have time for that. You need to know exactly what that sign says. And I remember, Mark, when we opened up the phone lines when we initially talked about this executive order, overwhelmingly people were saying that they were in support of this. And I think even a lot of the truck drivers, right, were saying that they felt like this was a good step.
Yeah, and Amy online just asked a good question here on the Facebook page. How in the world did they pass a CDL course to begin with?
That's a good question.
If they don't speak English. You have to, CDL license is not easy or cheap to get. I mean, they've got, the system is fixed, where if you're going to get a professional driver's license, a CDL, commercial driver's license, you have to go through months of training and pay whatever the steep tuition is to get that, because it's a valuable commodity. Once you have it, you can work in a lot of different industries.
Mm-hmm.
How did you do that not speaking a word of English? Could you go to a regular university as a foreign exchange student and speak zero English and still get a degree? I assume you could, I guess.
I don't know.
I don't know.
Google Translate. It doesn't make sense to me. I mean, for CDL, I mean, yeah, you'd have to do a written portion of that, but then wouldn't you have to do some, like a driver's license test? Wouldn't you have to do a test with an instructor in an 18-wheeler? I'm very clueless about this, but I would imagine you'd have to do that, and you'd have to be able to communicate.
A Spanish speaker or,
well, that's true. Now,
whatever the language is.
And now these companies, they feel like they have to offer translators who can translate 20 different languages so that they're all they're fair and inclusive and all these different things. And,
well, I'm going to make an observation here based on my travels this past week. We're rather insulated in the Midwest. Can I just tell you that? Just living and working in St. Louis as I have for 32 years now. We're rather insulated. And sometimes I get a little perturbed if I call a customer service line and it tells me to press 1 for English. Why is that not presumed that that's the primary language in America and you have to press 1 for Spanish? I don't know.
Do they do that in foreign countries?
I doubt it.
Press
doubt,
1 for French, I press 2 for English, 3 for Spanish.
But after spending a couple of days in Miami, Florida at the beginning and then one day as we had to go to the airport to leave Miami, Florida, I understand why it's like that there. Because at the port and at the airport, it was very clear that English was a second language for almost everybody I dealt with, from the people that checked our baggage to the airline people that worked the desks. They were all speaking Spanish to each other, and then they would switch over to English to talk to you to answer your questions. It was their primary language was Spanish.
So not quite the same, but I've been dealing with a complete headache of a situation related to Walmart, and I've had to call corporate over and over and over again. Oh my gosh, every single person is foreign, and yes, they speak English, but some of them it's very broken. And I'm not trying to be mean because I respect the fact that they could at least speak English and go back and forth with me, but there is a problem when it comes to understanding fully what I'm saying. I would try to tell them the situation and they would have to repeat it back and it'd have details missing. And it was very frustrating that of the quite literally 50 times I've probably called them and talked to them and wanted to claw my eyeballs out trying to deal with them.
Wow.
Not a single person was clearly from America speaking English clearly. It was very, very frustrating. By the way, Alec on YouTube was saying 8 weeks of training and it cost me $5,500 of my own money to get my CDL. And I said, hey, did you have to take a test with an instructor in the truck? Alec says, yes. So yeah, how would you get your CDL if you can't speak any English and you rely on Google Translator? How would you even be able to pass that?
These are all good questions. Now, I thought that as part of NAFTA, some people were able to cross the border and deliver stuff into America and go back. But I don't know if they were required to have an American CDL to do that or not. That's a question I don't know. But I think I remember that being part of the North American Free Trade Agreement. But maybe that plays a role in it. All good questions, Kim, and thank you for bringing that up this morning. Coming up, we're going to talk to the man who wants to be the next county executive in St. Louis. His name is Dennis Hancock. He's going to join me about 8:08. Stay tuned.
Get more at 971talk.com.